So meetings started in various cities, mostly in California. So Bob, Tom McCall, who's here at this, I believe he's on the boat right now. He shared in the meeting at the church before the pre-convention meeting. He said there were less than 20 meetings in the world when he got clean, because he got clean in the late 60s. 1960, 20 meetings in the world. It's starting, though. 1970s, it's about services. NA, a growing NA begins to band together and form services. So here's a letter from 1971. You can just I wish I could read this whole letter, but I can't. But I'm going to read this one little segment of it here. The principal purpose, they were proposing a conference, and I'm suggesting that this conference was the birth of the World Convention, the World Service Office, and the World Service Conference, all in one letter, all in one event. The principal purpose of this conference, however, is to get together delegates from NA groups in all localities, parentheses, both in the U.S. and other countries, to establish an NA World Central Office and elect a paid full-time business manager to be in charge of the office. So they were envisioning what was to come. It wasn't here yet in the 60s. They were envisioning you. You know, they were saying, we're going to create this conference where delegates from all over the world, from all countries, can come together. They were envisioning a single worldwide fellowship, which, by the way, is a very distinct difference from how our formation and AA's development over time. They actually have different, different organizational structures that occur throughout the world. We made a firm decision in the 80s to say, let's do it as one fellowship. And it'll have its challenges, but let's have one unified worldwide fellowship. And this was part of that vision right here, this letter. The Board of Trustees adopted the NA tree, which was the first kind of service structure that we... Thank you, Jeff.
It's water.
Oh, that's Teresa? Thank you. It's my wife taking care of me. Okay, so the NA tree. The NA tree was never implemented. There was never a service structure that formed in the way that it was described in the tree. But what they were doing is they were building a vision of a service structure. And then it started to form with subsequent service manuals. And they also tried to expand the literature in the 70s. They wrote a bunch of pamphlets, and so we started having pamphlets on the table in 1976, in addition to our little white book. But the little white book was fully self-contained. You could have just the little white book, and you had a meeting format. You had a little bit of, you had the steps, you had the traditions, it wasn't going to be enough. You know, we were going to have to go further, but you could start a meeting and start an NA community based on it. This thing, don't get the Germans talking about this, because you'll be listening for a while, but I say that because it was really the birth of translations. The Germans put together a first translation, and then later World Services tried their hand at hiring a translation company and then just translating and then giving the Germans the translation with tail wagging, you know, like, isn't it great what we, and they look at it and they go, gulp. Translations effort started slow. It started with mistakes. It started with us trying to figure it out. But when some of you have been involved in translations and know way more about it than I do, but the way that we've developed the translations process as a fellowship, nobody gave us that. We figured that one out. You figured that one out. That evolved within Narcotics Anonymous. But this was the humble beginnings of it right here. In 1980s, the theme of the 80s is the basic text. There was explosive growth in international development in the 80s around the basic text. And this NA philosophy of recovery was percolating, being talked about. and being thought through. And I'm not going to go into the story of the basic text in great detail. That would be a workshop every bit as long as this one. So I'm just going to touch on a couple of things. You may know that the basic text was not written by Jimmy and the World Service Office and NA World Services. It was not a project started in California to write a basic text. It was an uprising within our fellowship from the East Coast. And it was the first time that California had felt a big wave hit it from the East. Boom. And either had to kind of get on board or get washed into the sea, kind of. I may be being a little dramatic here, but it was kind of an uprising among people who say, we need to have a book. So they come and they ask around in California, what are you guys doing to write a book? Oh, we're thinking about it. We have a idea of doing it. And that, well, can you show me the progress? And they said, okay, we're going to do it. And it started in Georgia. It started in, you know, the South. They started putting flyers out like this. Come with us. Let's write a book. Let's write an NA big book. And that's what they were calling it. And it's saying, you are the book. You got to come and help us with that. You know, nobody's going to write this for us. Let's write this. It says, come help us write the book. So this is what they were doing. Now, these are a couple. They did a total of 7 of these officially, and some say maybe 9 total by the time they had some other gatherings. But whatever, they did it in grassroots workshops that they held. They called them conferences that they held throughout the country. They did become the World Literature Committee, and they did sync up their efforts with NA World Services. But it came from them. And just a couple of things. No, they're working with language at this one. This one on the left is from Memphis, Tennessee, when they met there, with gratitude in our cleanliness. Okay, so they're thinking, okay, we don't say sobriety. What do we say? Cleanliness. So they're trying things out. You know, that one didn't quite take. We want our book. How about you? You know, bang, bang, bang on the table. You want our book? You come help us write it. That's how that went. And at the end of 1982, or not the end, in 1982 at the World Service Conference, they had a draft. They had a manuscript of our basic text, and they brought it to the conference. They were the literature committee of the conference now, and they brought it to the conference for approval. The one on the left was what we think of as the first 10 chapters of the book, the main core of the book. And some of the translations efforts, as you know, that's the only book translated. So the one on the right is the stories. And they were actually considered 2 books combined into one. We even called them that back then, book 1 and book 2. And so you just try to picture this moment now. Those guys have been hammering away at this book. They've been hitting us with letters. I say us because I was clean at a couple years clean at that time when they were doing this, and I was keenly interested in everything that they were doing, and I read every letter that they sent out and every report. But this is the 1982 World Service Conference. In my little region, we had formed a region by then, and we had a delegate at that conference, and it was not crystal clear that this book was going to pass, that these hippies and bikers and whatever else had gathered in the East Coast and in these workshops had come up with this thing. Was this going to become our basic text? Were we really ready to have a basic text? Are they really the people who should write the basic text? But here's the motion on the floor: to accept the basic text approval form as the first edition of our book, of our Narcotics Anonymous book. So you could cut the air with a knife in the picture here, where that motion is on the floor and it's not super clear. So let's not, in 2022, NA World Services put together a little video about this moment. So let's watch it. Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the basic text approval form as the first edition of our Narcotics Anonymous book.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor of accepting the basic text approval form as the first edition of our Narcotics Anonymous book, please stand.
All right.
So now it's clear. Right at that moment, it was clear. This happened. You know, once we had that basic text, there's more stories about how difficult it was to get that first edition actually to print. But once in 1983, that book became generally available to the fellowship. At that point, there were about 3,000 NA meetings in the world in 1983. So over the next 20 years, that grew by 10, 30,000 NA meetings in the world by the end of 2003. And you know the rest of the story. That just kept on growing. Much when you think of the efforts in translations, and the efforts in fellowship development, and all the work that you guys are doing, that those guys sequestered upstairs in the EDM are doing. That's the story of NA now. Just absolute unstoppable spread of NA. Why five editions, though, and one revision to the NA basic text in 6 years? So I'm just going to skip through this really kind of quickly. The approval draft was passed at the 1982 conference to be published in early 1983. Before publishing it as the first edition in 1983, the approval draft was changed by some trusted servants without conference approval. So just try to, and they acted in good faith, these guys. They did what they thought was the right thing to do. They looked at certain language. They said this language is going to create problems if we interpret the traditions this way. And so they changed it. And then they wrote a letter to the fellowship and say, we changed it and here's why. They explained it, and this was the first edition. So the first edition of our basic text was not the exact manuscript that we passed. It was the manuscript tweaked a little bit by some people who felt like it needed to be tweaked a little bit. Lots of outrage followed. That is an understatement. In response, the presses were stopped and it was changed back. It was okay, put it back. The presses were stopped. It was changed back to the original manuscript. In response, I already said that, this was the second edition. So that's how we got two editions. Oops was the second edition. The World Service Conference then took up the issue with groups and sent them a form to vote on the changes. As far as I know, this is the only time in the history of NA that happened. The groups themselves directly made a decision. They were sent a vote, a motion form. They voted on it. It came back, and it was a decision. But the decision was, they said, the changes that we made, here's why we made them, here's the changes. Do you think we should make them? And the changes passed. The groups had objected to the process by which those changes were made, not to the substance of the change. Though the Lit Committee objected to both, and some of the people that were there still object to both, who feel like that was the wrong decision. It was changed again. This was the third edition, 1984. The fellowship then began to request some updates to the little white book, which we will examine in a minute. The trustees spent 1985 studying this and recommending a whole set of changes. Changes to the readings, changes to the basic text. And these were passed at the conference in 1986. So if you think of your home fellowship, you've been reading the same readings, and then world is doing what world does. We don't know what that is because we got other priorities. And then one day, all of your reading cards change. You're reading the readings at the meeting. Wait a minute. Who said to do that? You know, when did I say to do that? You know, so at first there was a little ripple, but then people sort of looked at it. The changes passed overwhelmingly at the conference when people finally got there. Because the italicized intros to the basic text main chapters were taken directly from the little white book. So if you've ever wondered why italicized at the beginning of every chapter, that's the little white book, just taken right and stuck right in the basic text. These were passed at the 1986. Because of that, the basic text was also updated with the new language along with all the main meeting readings. So that happened in 1986. This was the third edition revised in 1986. It was very popular. The decision was very popular. So happy with this, the 1986 conference said, let's do the same thing to the whole basic text. The charge was to clean up any grammatical punctuation, slight wording changes. You know, the way we wrote our basic text is a little untidy. Let's tidy it up a little bit. You know, no substantive changes, just tidy it up a little bit. An editor was hired to complete this work. The conference felt that this could simply be published when ready, rather than coming back for approval. This was done. And what could go wrong with that plan, right? This was the fourth edition, the ill-fated fourth edition, which came out in 1986, 87. And I put it that way because, again, it didn't happen at a conference. It was done, so they changed the book and sold the new book. But the editing had resulted in many errors. There were entire paragraphs missing, and the conference felt that the edit had gone way beyond what they had requested. A new editor was hired with the instructions to clean up the errors and make the edit much lighter. This passed at the next conference. This was the fifth edition, 1987. Most of you got clean on the fifth edition, right? 1987. So after all those changes in such a short time, the conference passed a 5-year moratorium on further changes to the basic text in 1988. Basically they were saying, give it a rest already. We have a basic text now. Let's stop the mishigas. Let's stop, you know, changing it. The moratorium expired and renewed 2 more times for a total moratorium of 15 years. So every 5 years, this would come before the conference. Should we do another 5 years? Don't touch the basic text? Yep, another 5 years. So 15 years. So when it came up again in 2003, the moratorium was not renewed, leaving the possibility for a 6th edition. This was kind of a breathless kind of feeling. Like I was on the board at that time, the World Board. And you know, it was just sort of like, okay, they're saying, let's maybe take a look at the basic text. So what exactly are they saying? Are they saying, let's go make all these changes to the first 10 chapters? Are they, AA kind of has a history of keep leaving those alone and changing out some stories. Should we do that? So the fellowship was surveyed. That's how we kind of addressed that. We just created a survey and started asking the fellowship, what do you want here? Does the lack of moratorium mean you want us to start editing again, you know, or what do you want? The fellowship was surveyed and discussions were held over the next few years about what, if any, changes they wanted or were open to. The results, leave the main 10 chapters alone, swap out some or all of the stories, add a new preface with updated info on the fellowship and the basic text. So that was kind of the charge. Yes, let's update it. Let's make the stories more diverse and universal. Let's include a lot of international stories. Let's leave the first 10 chapters alone. All of this was done, and the 6th edition was approved unanimously in NA. Unanimously in 2008. 5 stories were kept and the rest were replaced or added new ones. Not because there was something wrong with the replaced stories, but because all of the stories represented an American experience, almost all, not all, but almost all, an American experience from the 1980s. And so let's now have a much more diverse set of voices in our basic text from all over the world. This was a major effort to capture the diversity of our worldwide fellowship. This is significant. Now, it was the first time in our history that stories were included that had been written in other languages and translated into English. And as you probably know, one of those languages was Dutch, right? That somebody in this fellowship wrote their story, which got then translated to English, put in the basic text. And much like the culture around this convention, we still used English as the standard language that all the translations are based on. But now we were starting to get original material that was written in somebody else's language, brought to English, and then translated into all the other languages. The translations policy was changed as a result of the sixth edition. In the past, other language groups could publish the basic text without the stories, and most did, as you well know. Now, there, at least at that time, and I don't know if this has evolved any since then, but now they're expected to translate, quote, some or all of the stories. So we all work from the same basic text. So it isn't, you don't necessarily have to include every story, but the stories you include, we ask that they be this diverse set of stories. That was the policy. So let's get back to our pins now. Sobriety, I've touched on this a couple of times. Freedom from alcohol, from AA's problems other than alcohol. What should we do with that word, with that definition? And we believe that the causes of alcoholism and addiction are basically the same. That thing that shows up in a lot of Bill Wilson's writings, that shows up in that our purpose statement, it was in our little white book at that time. Do we want to do something with that? So let's just look at kind of where that went. You guys, stalwart NA members, know what I'm about to cover here, but I'm just going to cover it to establish it. AA's first step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I admit I'm powerless over this, you know, that our lives had become unmanageable. And the NA's first step, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. So this is the one really significant innovation in the language of NA's steps. And we've built our foundation as a fellowship on it. It represents a shift from powerlessness over a specific drug to powerlessness over my addiction itself. This is a different basis to kind of found a foundation to lay your step work on. It really is a major innovation in the 12 steps, which changed things for. Okay, listen to this guy.
It took a long time for me to understand what addiction was about, really. You know, I read the steps a thousand times, but I never really knew the true impact of what my addiction was about, you know. It's constantly creeping up, you know, when things of a nature of I get that gratification or that feeling good or it looks good and I want to run with it, you know. I'm still into that, you know, and I catch myself, well, here I go again. Running crazy because something made me feel good or, you know, I looked good and worthwhile running it to the ground until I start getting, you know, I actually get sick about it. You know? I think, you know, one of the things we come in here with, I think we talk about many things, but I think when we get to understand the true nature, or when I get to understand my true nature of my disease, how for all-encompassing it is, it's a whole me. You know, my very being is just addictive.
Yeah. Now that guy is one of our, you know, members that we just—he was everywhere. He was part of that writing of the basic text. He was at every world convention until he became infirm at the end of his life and couldn't make it. One of the heroes of our history, right there. But yeah. I'm tempted to wax on about him, but I'm not going. I just can't. I just love that guy. So what language can we use that captures and conveys the full impact of our first step, and what language confuses it? This was the question that they were wrestling with the basic text and all our literature since. So this was where that sort of the NA philosophy of recovery that we used to talk about was born. This phrase emerged in the 80s, and we seek to capture it in our literature and in our spoken language. Here are the major conceptual issues in this NA philosophy of recovery. De-emphasize the mention of specific drugs, and we kind of do that in our meetings, and not entirely, you know, it kind of helps to hear somebody used a drug like the one you use. It's not, we're not entirely throwing that up, but we de-emphasize that. Per step one, I'm not powerless over that, I'm powerless over this, you know, and I shouldn't say I'm not powerless over that, but the principle of the first step is not that I'm powerless over that, it's that I'm powerless over my addiction. Identify at the deeper level of feelings and experience. This is the foundation of kind of what NA kind of, the flag NA raised and rallied around starting in the 80s. One disease with different drugs and compulsions seen as symptoms, not separate diseases. That was kind of radical. You know, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. That says I have two diseases, you know, and this is why we've gone down that path of saying, let's standardize that. I'm an addict. Why am I saying I like green beans and vegetables? You know, if I said vegetables, doesn't that kind of cover green beans, you know? But anyway, other manifestations of addiction are not treated as outside issues. This is big, too. Like in the AA culture, you'll hear somebody say, I want to talk. They have a gambling problem, they're going to say something about their gambling in the meeting, that's an outside issue. In NA, I've addressed my drug addiction, I'm clean, but my addiction is manifesting in this other area. That's perfectly consistent with our first step and not an outside issue. You know, we help each other with the way addiction manifests in our lives. Okay, so you guys who've lived in the world of translations, I don't know if you know sometimes, you probably do, but how far off the radar this issue of translations is for the American Fellowship. It's not that they don't care, it's just kind of off the radar, you know, like they don't have to do it, you know. But here's the birth of something. You know how the translations process starts? They have a glossary of terms, and they say, okay, everybody sit down and start telling us what this word means. Let's come up with the proper language the proper words in your language for this concept. What is surrender? What is, you know, just go right down the list. You know, what are these words mean? So we also did that in writing the basic text. This was the birth of the first such glossary of terms. This was at that 1981 conference in Memphis. They said, when we want to talk about the condition of abstinence, which AA calls sober, what are we going to say? Clean. Let's use that word. And we weren't using that word a lot in NA at that time. Some people were, depending on their drug or whatever, but not. It wasn't common. Even introducing yourself at a meeting, I'm Ron, I'm a dope fiend and a juicer. You know, I mean, you'd hear that stuff all the time in NA meetings. I'm Ron, you know, let's see if I can say mine more colorful than you said yours. Or the treatment center is telling us, like right now, what do they say? I'm a person with a substance use disorder, right? We've been told forever, just use the language of AA or the language of the treatment center. We said, no, we're going to create language that we know conveys what we mean and unifies us all regardless of drug. And that's what this, so they created a glossary like that, addict addiction. We're gonna say that, I'm an addict. I remember the first times I'm sitting in a meeting of NA, we're going around the room and somebody's still a dope fiend and a juicer, you know, or whatever. And we come back and I think, okay, we're getting there. I remember the first time I heard, addict, I'm an addict, I'm an addict. I felt it in my heart, you know, it's like, we're getting there. It's us. It's we. It's not this kind and that kind and this kind. You know, it's us. It was powerful. What do we do with that then? They made all that up during the basic text. They made the case for it. And then when they and, But we were still talking however we talked. So we started then in the NA Way magazine having the discussion among ourselves. We sort of modeled our magazine after the AA Grapevine, and we created a magazine too, and we were publishing that magazine within the fellowship. Here's an example of the kind of discussion we were having in the NA Way from 1984, when we were saying, not only should we standardize our language in the literature, we should standardize our language in our sharing. That was a bit much. You know, the whole clarity statement thing and all of that. People felt like that, I don't know, are you going to tell me how to talk here, you know? And so we started saying, no, we're not going to tell you how to talk, but here, let's talk about the underlying issue that we're trying to address. So here's from the NA Way. Much care and hard work within our literature movement has gone into developing our own language with regard to our disease and our recovery process. This was done because in NA, we've taken on the task of broadening the perspective of the 12 steps to include addiction to all mood-altering, mind-changing drugs. We have changed the language to take the focus off the drug or drugs entirely and place the focus on the addiction itself and the recovery process. That does, in fact, set us apart. So we're trying to establish our voice, our brand, if you will, you know, our message. To keep that focus clear, we must use NA language at NA meetings. That's the way we can keep our doors as open as possible to exactly those whom our traditions target. We introduce ourselves at meetings as addicts, nothing else. That includes us all, excludes no appropriate people, sets no one apart as different, and is the only term used in our basic text. Rather than the words sober or sobriety, which imply freedom from alcohol, yet do not accurately describe freedom from any other substances, we use the words clean and recovery or clean time. These words are, again, all inclusive, I mean, setting no one apart. So this is not NA World Services preaching to us. This is us having a discussion among ourselves in our magazine and saying, here's the rationale. Here's why we think we should do this. So the next one now is, I wouldn't say preaching, but is, and finally, and the World Board of Trustees decided we're going to take this up also, and we're going to make a statement about that because it's controversial all over the fellowship. They said, let's lend some guidance on this. So here's some snippets from their guidance. From early on, AA was confronted by a perplexing problem, which we just looked at in some detail. We want to keep our focus on alcohol. So the alcoholic, here's the message. But these addicts come in here talking about drugs, inadvertently weakening our atmosphere of recovery, or of identification. But the problem that AA wished to avoid would have to be addressed by any group who tried to adapt these principles for drug addicts. And this is such a key point. Like, if they're saying, if I'm talking about alcohol and you're talking about heroin, how are we ever going to relate to each other? Well, didn't we then inherit that problem when we said no matter what drug? So really, the little old lady abusing her prescriptions and the dope fiend getting out of prison are supposed to relate to each other? How? How does that happen? Can someone with a heroin problem relate to someone with an alcohol or marijuana or Valium problem? How will you ever achieve the unity that the first tradition says is necessary for recovery? Our fellowship inherited a tough dilemma. And if we inherited this tough dilemma and we used the same language and tools that caused them to say, we think you should go start your own thing, that wouldn't make a lot of sense. So we said, let's create language and tools for that address that problem. Rather than converting the first step in the most natural, logical way, we admitted that we were powerless over drugs. Our founders made a radical change in that step. They wrote, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction. When addicts gather and focus on drugs, they're usually focusing on their differences because each used a different drug or combination of drugs. The one thing that we all share is the disease of addiction. It was a masterful stroke. With that single turn of a phrase, the foundation of the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship was laid. So that was the statement coming from the trustees saying, This is why we speak the way we speak. We're trying to hold the principle of our first step as sacred as and significant as it actually is. This became Bulletin 13 and is still on NA.org today.
You know, my very being is just addictive.
Yeah, I just for my own entertainment, I just had Bob say that again. My very being is just addictive. You know, I just love that. But because they got it. You know, if you wonder, did the old timers get it? Brief aside, I moved to Los Angeles in 1984 to take that job at the World Service Office. And in 1985, Jimmy Kinnon was dying. And he went around all the groups in the San Fernando Valley where I lived, basically saying his goodbyes, taking his cakes for his 35 years. And he came to my home group. And he sat at the back of the room after the meeting, and I walked right up to him. I knew Jimmy. Jimmy and I had spoken quite a bit because I was one of those guys out there in the world who would call him and talk to him about our little group in Fargo. And that was how NA was back then. Like, Jimmy was kind of helping us all, you know. And I said, Jimmy, you know, the way that we're making much about our first step now, you know, how we're saying it's like foundation and blah, blah. I asked him directly. I said, did you guys see that? Did you know that? Did you do that on purpose? Or did you just try some other language and you stumbled into this stroke of brilliance? He looked a little offended by the question, you know, and he said, of course we knew it. He said, we tried this and we tried that, and that language was the language that we thought really captured our message. So that's a moment that I carry around with me. Okay, but what should we do about our literature published before the basic text, which sometimes used language that was not consistent with the NA philosophy of recovery? So we got all this little white book language in the basic text, and it's causing a stir now in the fellowship as we're starting to adopt this notion that we need to package our message in a clear way. So work began in 1985 to examine the little white book in this light and for any other issues that need to be addressed. The result was the third edition revised passed at the 1986 conference. This was an extensive edit of the little white book, and therefore the meeting readings and the italicized portions of the basic text, as I said before. Let's look at some of the changes made. Now, this is another room that I was in because I was this, just got a picture, 20-something young guy who got hired from that little town in the farm country and is now living in Los Angeles as a writer, working with all these sort of grizzled dope fiends, urban dope fiends, and I'm their wordsmith, you know. So I'm helping with this project, but they're the ones, you know, making the changes. But here's the second to the last paragraph of It Works prior to 1986. The only way to keep from getting or continuing a habit is to not take that first fix, pill, or drink. If you're like us, you know that one is too many and 1,000 never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again or create a new one. So is it a new one, or is it the same whack-a-mole son of a bitch popping up over here, you know? And so we started looking at all that language and we said, maybe we should go back and fix some of that stuff. So here's what we did with that paragraph. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction, so is it really that we get or continue a habit? Is that what we have as a habit, or is it a disease? The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is to not take that first drug. So there was a lot of discussion in that room about fix, pill, or drink. Should we extend that list? Fix, pill, drink, snort, toke, what else? Anybody? Oh, you know, shoot, okay, anal suppository, you know, I mean, like, what are we going to actually do with that language, you know? And they said, it's more colorful. Fix, pill, or drink is actually more fun, more colorful, but where does it stop? And how much slang? What's going to happen in 2025 when we've used the language of 1985 to do a bunch of slang terms for how we use, so we just got rid of it. And then, or create a new one was just removed. We release our addiction all over again. The last paragraph, and this is the big one. This is the most significant change, I think. The substitution of alcohol has caused a great many addicts to form a new addiction pattern, which in its progression brings as many problems as before. We seem to forget that alcohol is one of the oldest known drugs. It would appear that we are people with addictive personalities who are strongly susceptible to alcoholic addiction. So, you know, that just blew right by us, like, we don't drink either. That's how we would have interpreted that. But if you look at the language, it's saying if we do drink, we might also become an alcoholic. And it's like, what if we drink and we don't become an alcoholic? Are we kind of okay then? Or, you know, so we knew we had to change this one. This was the big one, and this is what we came up with. Thinking of alcohol as different, just thinking of it as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. Let's just be clear, you know. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. So this principle of total abstinence is just crystallized here, and this principle of not alcohol too, but alcohol included, right? Second paragraph of why are we here prior to 86. Most of us realize that in our addictions, there it is, we were slowly committing suicide, but such cunning enemies of life are narcotics and sedation that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Jail did not help us at all. Is everybody in the room prepared to say that? Jail did not help me at all. I've heard a lot of people say, I didn't get arrested, I got rescued, right? So jail did not help us at all. Medicine, religion, psychiatry seemed to have no answers for us that we could use. All these methods having failed for us. In desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. So we were basically saying, is this really what we want to say to the professionals, to the clergy, to everybody, that, nah, you got nothing, you know? So we said, how do we fix that one? Most of us realize that in our addiction, here we are again, a singular with many manifestations, we are slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy. Not narcotics and sedation, not that particular set of drugs, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. There we go. And I think there's a little tweak there. There's a little thing there where the American English and the British English have a little, they would probably say none of these methods were. And ours, we take the word none to be singular. None of these methods was. But anyway, word nerd side point. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation, and then it goes on as we do. But so that was another change. The first paragraph of what is the NA program, there's only one requirement for membership, the honest desire to stop using. There are no musts in NA, but we suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. These two things that are bolded there were always controversial. Why are we saying honest desire? The tradition just says desire. What if I come here and I have a desire to use and I have a desire to stay clean and I don't know what the hell's honest anymore, you know? Okay. There's only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We cleared that up in 1986. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. So we're not saying there are no musts. There are no musts unless you want to stay clean, you know? Side note. Honest desire was never in any version of our traditions, as some people say. That change was made here, not in the tradition itself. The tradition always said, just said, the desire to stop using. That change, however, was made in the AA third tradition when in 1949 they went from the long form to the short form of the tradition. So they dealt with that. Theirs used to say, honest desire. And then they tweaked it. So we ended up with that language in our literature, but never in our traditions. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, color, creed, religion, or lack of religion. Anybody left out of that list? When we were looking at that, one of the men in the room was a gay man, and not a shy gay man. You know, he was a very vocal person and super articulate, just a beautiful, wonderful, very good friend of mine. But he's in that room and he's saying, okay, we say race and color. We say, isn't that the kind of the same concept in two different ways? But where are the sexual minorities that are already walking around feeling like they're not welcome here? You know, let's address that. And you would think in a fellowship brimming with love and service that that would have been an of course. But this is 1985. This was still deep in the culture of homophobia in the world, deep in it was not a foregone conclusion. That was a kind of a raucous discussion. And they tried a few things. They tried sexual preference, which some people would just say, oh, that's straightforward, sexual preference. Okay, let's go with that. Of course, the gay people in the room weren't having that, you know. It's not my preference, it's my identity, it's who I am. And so that one, how about sexual orientation? Oh, that's better, you know, sexual orientation, but who does that leave out? So this is 1985, and John Farrell made the case that leaves out people it's a gender identity thing. And this was not being discussed in 1985, but he had the foresight. He said, let's say, instead of sexual preference or sexual orientation, let's say sexual identity. And that covers a lot of more bases than those other languages. So that happened published in 86. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. This, to me, was a huge moment. Then we had a drought of book-length literature following the publishing of our basic text. I bet most people don't even know that, because that's not a fact of history that's discussed a lot. But we got our basic text in 1982, and we had all of this energy to say, let's write a Steps and Traditions book like the 12 and 12. Let's write this whole list of books. And we got busy in 1982. So I say we had a drought, but it was not for lack of trying. Local communities were encouraged to form lit committees and generate input, and much was generated for a local meditation book and a Steps and Traditions daily meditation book and a Steps and Traditions book, but no drafts combining this input into a coherent book felt acceptable enough to submit for approval. We just couldn't get there again. It was like, during that time, we were experimenting with process and debating the appropriate roles for the office, the conference, and the fellowship. We tried using a professional non-member writer for It Works at one point in 1986, which went very badly and did not pass at the conference. It just didn't feel like an addict is talking to you, like our literature does, you know, because all... Well, let me just, I think I say this. It was the only time that had ever been tried. No existing literature was written by any non-member professionals, as is sometimes claimed. Some people go around saying that, you know, like, we've outsourced our literature to the, you know, we're hiring non-addicts and they're writing that about it. Not true, just not true. Never been done. It was tried one time, went badly. I have more to say about that in a second. This inability to produce any major publishable work went on for about 10 years, almost 10 years. So we just were working our asses off trying to get literature, and nothing was coming out of it. So these are the questions we were wrestling with. Is the magic of the grassroots process used to write the basic text reproducible as we grow in numbers, diversity, and international spread? For example, how do we include other language groups? So the basic text was this highly inclusive process where we just went around with workshops. And we were still trying to do that kind of stuff in the 80s and create local. We were just not having any success. And meanwhile, the fellowship is diversifying in geography, language, every way, and we were not able to capture it. Another question, is there a role for writers, or what about forever non-professional? So how can we capture the mature voice and perspective of the growing number of experienced members? This is what we desperately wanted to do, and we were not being very successful. By about 1990, the staff team approach takes shape and is still used today, so I'll just tell you briefly what that's about. A team of special workers under Tradition 8 is assembled for each project to perform project management, writing, and editing functions. So we did kind of resolve the issue of, can we use writers? Yes, not to just give them the thing, go say, write us a book, but to be in the mix, capturing what's going on and bringing the skill and art of writing to the process. But they're always addicts and always very experienced members. We're not asking anyone else to be the writer on our literature. A work group of trusted servants, now that we're in Tradition 9, volunteers, that's really the distinction, right? Tradition 8, hired, we hire people, pay them. Tradition 9, we're talking about volunteers, including one or more world board members, is formed to work closely with the writer-editor team and collaborate and provide input as drafts are developed. And for the grassroots involvement, the magic of the basic text, extensive efforts are made to solicit input from the local fellowship everywhere throughout the development. So if you were around when It Works, How and Why was written, you will have seen drafts circulated. You're being asked for your input. Same with Living Clean, same with all of them. So local workshops are held around the fellowship to generate input on the work under development using a format developed by NAS. Similar NAS-run workshops are held at various fellowship events, and individuals and groups are asked to just send in your stuff. So technology has helped, the modern world has helped, but we've sort of captured it again, the grassroots nature of our literature. Time? Okay, that's perfect. We are about to get to the... Okay, so as the 80s came to a close, two things are in place. One, the message in our literature is clear and internally consistent with capturing the NA philosophy of recovery. Lots of work done, we get there. We've got our literature internally consistent, and our process for capturing the experience of our ever-maturing fellowship in new literature has been established in the staff team approach. So with those two things in place, here's what followed. Just for Today, 1991. 12 Concepts, 1992. It Works, How and Why, 1993. The Step Working Guides, 1998. Sponsorship, 2004. Living Clean, 2012. So they just started coming. We just, like, we uncorked it. We solved the problem, and here they come. Guiding Principles, Spiritual Principle a Day. And what was the impact?
It's going to take all of me, and it's going to take all of you, and all the people that you're going to talk to, and all the people you're going to carry the message to make this a greater reality. There are people out there dying of our disease. There are people all over this world dying of our disease. And believe it or not, we are truly the only people who can really help them. Let's never forget that. You and I have been given through illness, through suffering, and through disease, a talent for helping other human beings like ourselves. Let's never forget that we have it, and that we are responsible for others.
Yes. sweating in an old church basement, wishing I was wasted. Never thought I'd say this.
Hello, my name is Jason.
And I've been losing myself, I've been losing my mind. And I've been standing in the rain, just trying to stay dry. I was so ashamed to be in this seat till I met a man who was 20 years clean. He said everybody here felt the same defeat. Nobody walks through these doors on a winning streak. Can't look at me cause he's guilty. And I swear that the last couple months that mother tried to kill me. By the time I saw it coming, it was done with already. It's hard to run from it when it runs in the family. A problem with a thousand more it's causing. Damn, this shit's exhausting. This is why I walked in.
Thanks for letting me share, y'all.
And I've been losing myself, I've been losing my mind. And I've been staying to be in this seat till I met a man who was 20 years clean. He said everybody here has felt the same defeat. Nobody walks through these doors on a winning streak. Way down here at my lowest, at the end of my rope, at the end of my rope. So what do I do? So what do I do? What do I do?
Hold on to me as we go, as we roll down this unfamiliar road. And although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone. I'm gonna make this place your home. Settle down, it'll all be clear. Don't pay no mind to the demons, they fill you with fear. The trouble, it might drag you down.
Thank you. That's it. I'm done. Thank you.